I don't mind leading it if you have things to.
Good morning. I call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. It is 9 a.m. on Thursday, March 19th. This is Senator Natasha von Imhoff, joined by Senator Stedman, Senator Olson, and Senator Hoffman. Today we are hearing public testimony on the operating budget, HB 205, and the capital budget, SB 154. Today we have Ketchikan, Wrangell, Petersburg, Sitka, Kenai, Kodiak, Seward, Valdez, Homer, and Cordova. Signups are anytime between now and 10:15. Each person will have 2 minutes to give public testimony. And if at any time you want to provide written testimony as well, the email is finance.committee@akledge.gov. So I'm going to go ahead and open up public testimony. I will go by in order of sign up, and the first person online is Mr. John Sweeney, followed by Marilyn Menish Mucci.
Good morning.
Mr. Sweeney, anytime.
Okay, great. Thank you. Good morning. My name is John Sweeney, and I am the Chief Financial and Administrative Officer of the City and Borough of Sitka. Thank you very much for providing me the chance to testify this morning. The last 48 hours in the United States and well nigh the world have been unprecedented, as we all know. We've seen, with breathtaking speed, decisions being made by governments at all levels on a scale not seen since World War II. We, as a state and a nation, will make it through this health pandemic. The long-term impacts to our economy resulting from this pandemic, however, will take much longer to recover from, especially in Southeast Alaska, where the tourism industry is a large part of the local economy and a major employer. It is highly likely that significant sources of local revenue, that is sales tax, from tourism will be significantly reduced. Reduced local revenue means that smaller Southeast communities can't do their part in shouldering the economic downturn statewide. It is this reason, anticipated diminished local tax revenues, that Southeast Alaska needs assistance more than ever before from the legislature. Ladies and gentlemen, we can't pay school bond debt service if there are no sales tax revenues to use to make the payment. People can't ride on barges. National forests are wonderful to look at, but you can't eat them. Southeast Alaska, as well as other parts of the state, will need to depend on the state legislature to ensure that the basic needs of all Alaskans, not just Southeast Alaskans, but all Alaskans, are met. And the best way to do this is by ensuring that existing state support programs, community assistance, school bond debt reimbursement are maintained, and that the basic transportation we depend on in Southeast Alaska, the Alaska Marine Highway System, is fully funded so that it can be operational and dependable.
Mr. Sweeney, can you wrap up your comments, please?
Thank you for providing me the opportunity to speak to you and appreciate everything you do.
Thank you, Mr. Sweeney, for your testimony. Next up, we have Marilyn Menishmuchi, followed by Brian Merritt.
Good morning. I'm Marilyn Menishmuchi. I represent myself, and I'm calling from Petersburg. I would like to speak about the operating budget, House Bill 205. I support fully funding the Alaska Marine Highway System. We have been without our marine highway for over a month, and it has been devastating for coastal Alaska. We need a functioning marine highway. I also support funding for public radio. With the coronavirus that is happening right now, the daily and sometimes twice a day updates from public radio has been so important for the communities across Alaska. I support funding for our universities and for public schools. To help fund this, I support a state income tax and a very small or modest PFD. Thank you for having this public testimony.
Thank you, Marilyn, for your testimony. Next up, we have Brian Merritt, followed by David Beebe.
Hello, this is Brian Merritt from Wrangell. I'm a 53-year Wrangell resident. Thank you for hearing my testimony, honorary legislators. I think we need to scrap the PFD for this year. Alaska is going to need every dime it has to take care of our people. I think that money could be used for certain welfare situations that will possibly be dialed into food stamp and maybe energy to heat houses sort of thing. And I'd like to put in a plug for the Marine Highway System. We definitely need to fund that fully. This is a good example. We need freight hauled to different places. We have barges for some of that, but if things really get into a crisis and we lose our jet service, for example, we're going to need that barge system and the ferry system. The ferry could haul lots of freight, especially at 20 knots versus a barge that does 10. We definitely need both of those to keep the state economy going. And anyway, I'd like to see full funding for the Marine Highway System, and I agree with the lady from Petersburg. We've lost our ferry for the last month or so, and it's definitely had some impacts in Wrangell as well. And with the upcoming seafood industry coming online with all the fish coming back, we're going to need fish hauled down south as well. And anyhow, those are some concerns I have for the state of Alaska, but keep up the good work of what you folks are doing. I know you all have the big picture of Alaska in mind, and I know you'll do the best things you possibly can. Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you. So we have David Beebe, and then it looks like Jeffrey Short is back online. Okay, so we'll have David Beebe followed by Jeffrey Short.
Hi, my name is David Beebe. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for taking this testimony. In a time of a protracted state fiscal crisis, poised to suffer emergent additional social and economic impacts from COVID-19, I urge the Finance Committee to apply the universal strategy for facing mass casualties. It's called triage, and it makes decisions that are based upon the highest and best uses for the allocation of limited resources. All of the stated reasons for allocating $70 million for the Catlin and Cake Road projects are not only self-contradictory, but in contravention of a clearly expressed public consensus for a functioning ferry system in Southeast Alaska and other parts of the state. The cascading set of additional economic, social, and healthcare crises are imminent. And this, of course, occurs on top of an eviscerated social safety net and an already incapacitated marine highway transportation system, which provides basic staples and groceries and livelihoods for our communities of the Alexander Archipelago. And I would hope that there would be a process by which we could reappropriate the $70 million that remain in these projects and apply them to the highest and best purposes. So if you would reconsider the 2012 allocation for the certainly the CAKE project road, because we don't need, as the Department of Transportation has quoted, a single lane $40 million gravel road for the purposes of subsistence and recreation in this dire time of our need. So thank you very much for this consideration. I do have deep concerns about the misinformation that local governments of both Petersburg and CAKE.
Mr. Beebe, can you summarize your comments? Your 2 minutes are up.
Okay. Well, thank you for this opportunity, and I hope that anyone reading the coverage in the Juneau Empire will understand that there has been a non-transparency here on this. So thank you very much. Bye.
Thank you very much, Mr. Beebe. Before we go to Jeffrey Short, I do want to mention that we have Senator Bishop, Senator Olson, Senator Wilikowski, and Senator Wilson have all joined us. So Mr. Short, you're up, followed by Joel Jackson. So Mr. Short?
Oh, hi, yes. Thank you. My name is Jeff Short, and thank you for this opportunity to testify to Mr. Chairman and the members of the committee. I'm a member of the Juneau School Board and a 48-year resident of Juneau, and I'm testifying to encourage you to include the provisions of House Bill 236 to increase the DSA for the school funding, despite the severe pressures I know you're all under for elsewhere for with the declining oil price and other crises that with the coronavirus that are facing us. Nonetheless, you have a constitutional duty to support public education, and we've taken severe cuts already. Since 2010, we've lost $10 million in spending power, and that's the amount of cuts we've had to make in our district alone. If we have flat funding this year, we'll make another $1.5 million in cuts, and that will lead to elimination of nearly all of our discretionary programs, plus elimination of some combination of seven more teachers and up to 13 support staff. We've already cut 52 positions out of 360 since 2010, and losing seven more will amount to a 16% reduction since then. This will increase class sizes to often more than 25 for K-2 classes and more than 30 for the higher grades. So, failure to keep up with inflation since at least 2007 has already led to deep cuts in our schools. And these cuts come on top of increasing poverty and diversity among our students, both of which require additional resources to effectively address. Contrary to some claims, Alaska does not spend more per student on education than any other state. In nominal terms, we're fifth highest, and after accounting for cost of living differences, we're 12th, right next to Ohio and Michigan. But our small and dispersed population makes delivery of educational services inherently more expensive than other states. And after accounting for those differences, we're about average.
Mr. Short, can you summarize your comments, please?
I'm done, yes. I implore you to incorporate the provisions of HB 236 in your funding for the next two fiscal years. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Short, for your testimony. Next up, we have Joel Jackson, followed by Melina Marvin. Mr. Jackson?
Yes, good morning. My name is Joel Jackson. I'm the president of the Organized Village of CAKE, and I want to express my appreciation for you for taking my call this morning.
Thank you. You can proceed whenever you're ready. Yep, we can hear you.
Okay. Well, I would like to specifically ask that you, the committee, repeal the unexpected balance of the 2012 capital budget appropriations for the CAKE Petersburg Road project. My reasoning is we had a poll taken here in Cake. 217 people oppose the road. They don't want it. For varying different reasons, there was only 27 that was for the road and 24 undecided. So this gives you a good indication that Cake does not need this road. It does not want this road. We are, we want to protect our hunting, our traditional hunting and gathering area. With this road, it would just make people more, it would just open it up. And we don't want that as a community of Cake. We strongly oppose this. I know our city had read, wrote the letter or email to the governor and Senator Steadman that they wanted the road. But as you can see, that this is almost like 79% of the population voting here in Cake greatly opposes this road. And so I just urge that this money, these funds, go to something else. I don't care what it goes to. Education, ferry, of course the ferry's always on our mind, to connect us with our neighboring communities, for our school kids to travel, for our elders to go to the hospital because they can't fly on a plane.
Mr. Jackson, can you summarize your comments, please?
Yes. Well, thank you again, and I appreciate you letting me make my comments this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson, for your comments. Next up, we have Melina Marvin, followed by Robert Purcell.
Hi, this is Melina Marvin. I'm calling you from Petersburg. I operate a direct market seafood company here. My husband is a troller. We own property in the city of Kupernov. That's where our family cabin is. And that's why I'm calling you today. I wanted to thank all of you in the room and just offer my gratitude for being leaders and being committed to public service in this time of crisis. I know it's not easy, and my heart is with you. I think in times like these, we have to turn to governing from a place of consensus when it comes to budget items, not a place of controversy. And as Joel just very clearly stated to you direct from the community that the Cake Road is intended to serve, we have no consensus on that road, and in fact, a lot of controversy. And I would ask that all of the senators please listen to the people who live in these communities, not Senator Steadman, when it comes to the balance of that $40 million appropriation for the Cake Road. Cake is opposed to the road. City of Kupernov is vehemently opposed to the road, and Petersburg has a long time record of coming out in opposition to the road. I'm not saying there aren't a few people who might enjoy it, but again, we're in a time where we need to govern from a place of consensus, not a place of controversy. What Petersburg has unanimous consensus on is strong support for the Alaska Marine Highway System, and great sadness and frustration that we've lost the ferries. This is unanimous across party lines, generations, anything that would traditionally divide constituents. Everybody wants the ferries back. So I'm imploring you from Petersburg, from here on the ground, to reappropriate that money. This already happened in 2016. This project was shelved because it wasn't deemed a prudent use of funds considering the state's fiscal crisis. And if anything, we have only doubled, tripled, or quadrupled that crisis with all that's going on, all that you need to be considering in this operating budget heading into this year or year and a half of coronavirus response.
Can you please summarize your comments, please, Ms. Marvin?
Absolutely. We need our ferries up and running, and we need the remainder of the budget that was originally appropriated for the Cake Road redirected to transportation choices that a majority of citizens in this region support. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up, we have Robert Purcell, followed by Gary Paxton. Mr. Purcell?
Good morning. My background is I've been in emergency services now for 40 years, and I retired as the fire chief here in Homer, spent 17 years doing 45 disasters around the country for FEMA, including in Eagle and Galena, other places in the state of Alaska. And in that time, I saw the incredibly valuable role that public radio can play during critical emergencies. And I'm also on the board of KBBI since retiring because I support public radio. Public radio is uniquely positioned to support the for the preparation and the response to and the recovery from disasters. The COVID-19 pandemic is an extraordinary example of where public radio can play a critical role in supporting emergency providers and local governments in providing critical information to the public. Public radio is, in fact, part of the emergency service community. It is uniquely positioned to support public information during emergencies. And I'll give you some examples from here in KBBI. As we're speaking here, KBBI is having a live coffee table call-in show with representatives from the city and the fire department and the hospital so the community can reach right out to those folks and find out what's going on in our community, not just statewide. KBBI also has a formal written cooperative agreement with the city of Homer to fulfill this kind of role in all emergencies that the community in our area might face. KBBI broadcasts our city council meetings and borough assembly meetings live. Now, this has obviously become much more important because those meetings are now done virtually, and if people want to participate in the meetings, they have to listen in and then call in to make comments to our local government officials. The radio station is also providing regular updates on closures and other community responses to COVID. And this is a key. Major media can do statewide work, but public radio works at the local level so that the community needs are addressed at the community level and is accessible to the needs of the folks who live there locally.
Mr. Purcell, can you wrap up your comments, please?
Absolutely. Public radio will be critical to keeping the public informed at the local level on local conditions and the response to the COVID-19 epidemic or pandemic. And I encourage you to give it full support, not just what's in the budget, but give consideration to how to support it more strongly in the future. It's going to be a key here. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up, we have Mr. Gary Paxton, followed by Elizabeth Medicine Crow. Mr. Paxton.
Good morning. Gary Paxton, Mayor of Sitka. Listen, I just praise you for this time of crises and complexity on what you're doing. I know with Bruce's leadership and the rest of you, you'll do the best you can. I have three issues, school bonded indebtedness, second, community assistance, and third, full funding of the Alaska Marine Highway System. The most important of those three is the funding of the Alaska Marine Highway System, and that's a priority. I would use as much of the permanent fund as you can or need to get us to where we got to go. God bless. Thank you. Pax out.
Yes, we have Senator Stedman would like to say a word.
Yeah, Mayor Paxton, I just, a quick note. I see they had your finance guy, Sweeney, on earlier. It'd be nice if you could put together a letter for us kind of on what you think the impact is going to be of loss in revenue for the loss of the cruise industry and potential downturn in the fisheries we're looking at, apparently. If you could get that to us, it would be helpful to get to deal with the magnitude. And you will see the legislature take action on the Marine Highway this year. We'll see what the governor does when he gets it. But we're trying to, you know, right those ships and get them moving. And then just as a quick note, because we've been struggling here, working long hours, trying to get our operating budget out early and get out of town before this virus issue shuts the legislature down. I'd just like my colleagues to note that when Gary Paxton retired from the military as a colonel, came to Sitka to manage Sitka, and the pulp mill shut down a week later. We now just hired another retired colonel. from the military as city administrator, and we got the virus. So I thought I'd just pass that along, Paxson. It's almost deja vu in the economics 25 years later.
Indeed. Fact is, we are having a letter drafted now. We've got a rough draft that's going to the delegation. You're going to be furnished a copy of that, and I'll assure you get it, Senator Stedman. God bless and thank you for your good work.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Paxton. Mayor Paxton, we have Elizabeth Medicine Crow followed by Adam Davis.
Ganesh Chishawa, thank you. This is Elizabeth Medicine Crow. I'm calling in on behalf of myself. I am from the community of Cake, and I also work out of Anchorage. I'm calling in to specifically ask that you repeal the unexpected balance of the 2012 capital budget appropriation for the Cake-Petersburg Road project. I believe that especially at a time of crisis like we're in now, this type of controversial issue needs to be put on hold. Those funds can be better utilized to support the transportation that the community actually wants and has expressed deep support for, which is the Alaska Marine Highway System. That system is incredibly important to the community, to my village of Cake, as well as all the other communities of Southeast Alaska and along the coast of Alaska. And that $40 million that was appropriated should be put to better use. At this time, there is not support for the road, and it is controversial. So at a time when we're in crisis, as a person who comes from Cake, and we have our home still in Cake, and our family, and for thousands of years, this has been our ancestral territory. It is really important and appropriate for this body to listen to the people of the community, to the people of Petersburg as well, and think deeply about what it is they're actually wanting as opposed to imposing something upon them. So thank you. Those are my comments.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up, we have Mr. Adam Davis, followed by Tommy Glanton. Mr. Davis?
Yes, thank you for taking my call and taking this testimony. I want to thank you for working hard during this time of crisis, and I just want to call in support of the road. Our community is in need of economic opportunities, and it's not going to be a huge driver, but it allows us to have options in a world when our options are growing smaller and smaller. So because I support the road does not mean I do not feel that the ferries are unnecessary. The ferries are still completely necessary, but this just gives us more options. And I just wanted to call and voice my support for with the Cake Access Project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Davis, for your testimony. Next up, we have Tommy Glanton, followed by Marla Howard. Mr. Glanton?
Hi, good morning. Thanks so much for taking my testimony. I'm a licensed clinical social worker and the chief clinical officer at Seaview Community Services, and I just wanted to encourage you to support increased capital funding for substance abuse treatment and behavioral health, particularly now with the first positive COVID-19 case in Seward. We're significantly concerned about our underserved populations that often don't have access to treatment that supports them in maintaining strong physical health. Approximately a year ago, we opened a 10-bed facility in Seward to support recovery housing treatment for individuals with substance use disorders. Since that has been open, the facility has been basically full ever since the first cohort came in. We're in desperate need of additional space to let additional residents access these needed services and prevent people from leading kind of their addiction lives, which include higher crime and greater health risks for the whole community. So as we know, with increased health stress, we're going to have more mental health and substance use crises happen across the state of Alaska. And so I would ask that you consider additional support so that our communities can be healthier. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up is Marla Howard, followed by Rebecca Knight. Ms. Howard? Marla Howard?
Hello?
Hello, we can hear you.
Oh, okay, thank you. I'm calling from CAKE. My name is Marla Howard. I'm a former city councilwoman. We did a petition. We have 217 persons against this road to Petersburg. We are not willing to compromise our way of life at the Tlingit of Alaska. Yes, we really do live off of this. The sea.
Okay.
Right. Hello?
Hello?
We also got a letter, I believe it was 2016, saying it would cost $510,000 annually to maintain this road. And that's, yeah, where's that going to come from? Please use the money, the $40 million, please put that towards our Alaska Marine Highway. Our schools are suffering. We're Southeast Islands. We're like a huge community. We go to Juneau to shop. We go to Sitka to go to the hospital. We used to go to Petersburg to go to their stores when I was a kid. But some say they want economic growth here, but not if it's going to compromise our way of life. We really do live off of this land. Thank you for hearing me today.
Thank you, Ms. Howard, for your testimony. Next up, we have Rebecca Knight, followed by Diana Carbonell. Ms. Knight?
Hi, good morning. My name is Rebecca Knight. I'm a Petersburg resident, and I'm calling in from Stevens Pass en route home following a fishing trip, so hopefully I won't lose connection. As a matter of serious financial responsibility, I request that you immediately repeal the unexpected balance of the 2012 capital budget appropriation for the CAKE Petersburg Road project. It is a colossal waste of public funds which could be better spent on truly legitimate needs. There are many more needs than...
Still there? Nope, she's still there. Ms. Knight, I think we lost you. If you want to call back in a bit, we can try to fit you in, but we can't hear you anymore. Next up is Diana Carbonell.
Yeah, hi, my name's Diana Carbonell. I'm a resident of Homer, and I just wanted to make a quick pitch for public radio. I've been a listener to KBBI and a supporter of KBBI, and I always appreciate local public radio because it's timely and it's accurate, and just especially this last week when you have rumors on the internet and you're looking for a source of good local information, and I get that from my public radio station. I think it's important to keep citizens informed, and I think in terms of the cost of public radio for what it can do to for local governments to get their word out, I just think it's incredibly valuable. And I also just want to say, as a middle-class Alaskan, watching my state being just dismantled, when I'm not asked to contribute anything, I just think is ridiculous. I think it's time for Alaskans to step up and those who can pay something for our state government. And I thank you very much for listening to me. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you, Ms. Carbonell, for your testimony. Next up is Christina Bitterman, followed by Terry Haynes. Christine?
Good morning. My name is Christine Bitterman with the City of CAKE. I'm the city clerk. I just wanted to let you know that I personally am in support of the road project and would like to state that if there was a petition, it wasn't through the City of CAKE or the state, as far as I know. Thank you for your support for the road.
Thank you, Christine, for your testimony. Next up, we have Terry Haynes, followed by Douglas Pengilly. Terry, you're up.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And I'd like to start off by thanking you for doing this work on behalf of all Alaskans. I know you guys are under time constraint, so I'll get right to it. First off, I'd like to support funding for coastal communities for dealing with the COVID-19 crisis. I know coastal communities have pretty fragile local economies right now, looking around Kodiak, and nothing is going on. I think a lot of people are wondering where their next paycheck is going to come from. And along that line, public radio has proven to be an amazing resource for us right now for all the reasons that Mr. Purcell noted. They've really been an amazing source, as we always said, in the times of crisis, and I think that they have shown that they deserve that investment. For the marine highway system, I'd say we need our ferries now more than ever here in Kodiak, that extra connection, again, for the reasons already conveyed to you by other coastal community residents. Also, for revenue sharing, or what's now called community assistance, again, you know, when we're looking at here in Kodiak, possibly giving our local businesses a tax break or figuring out ways to allow them to survive, this is the time that that revenue sharing, that pass down of oil tax revenue straight to communities is most important. Also, for school bond debt reimbursement, I know that this was an easy way to cut a lot of money out of the budget, but I have to point out that school bond debt reimbursement doesn't affect communities the same. It depends on the age of your debt and the size of your debt. And here in Kodiak, it wasn't that long ago that we made a sizable investment in our local infrastructure, a generational investment. And even though I know it was a handshake deal, I really think that the state should step forward to those communities that they essentially agreed to share that debt. That local infrastructure certainly is important right now. Just to finish off, I would like to say that this sort of, I think, points out the fact that we need to have a reasonable oil tax system that would give us dependable revenue and allow our oil companies to do business in a way that they can do over a long-term basis. And I think this points out the need as
Mr. Haynes, can you please summarize your comments? Your 2 minutes are up, please.
I sure will. A broad-based tax, I think, is something that in the future I think you should be considering. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Haynes. Next up, we have Douglas Pengilly, followed by Deborah Potter.
Hello?
Hello, Douglas?
This is Deborah Potter.
Okay.
What?
Do we have Douglas from Kodiak?
Hi. I'm calling asking you to support funding for public radio.
Could you state your name for the record, please?
My name is Douglas Pengilly.
Okay.
And I'm calling from Kodiak, Alaska. And why I'm calling is I want to have this committee support funding for public radio. My understanding is what came out of the House was like $1 million, or maybe exactly $1 million. I think you should fund it at that, if not higher. You know, public radio is important to communities in Alaska, especially more isolated communities like Kodiak. At any time, under any circumstances, but right now, the idea of not having funding for public radio, or not having the maximum possible funding for public radio to meet its needs, would be terrible, because everybody knows what's going on with the coronavirus. And that is our KMXT, our local radio right now, public radio, is the primary source for getting information on what's going on, what's open, what's available. Everything, answering questions that people have about what do I do, where do I go, that is all coming through KMXT right now. In fact, there's a show that I'm missing right now that's giving that information. You know, it becomes very important. You know, you have people, my wife and I, we're both, you know, retirement age. We're kind of, you know, following all the advice. We're here in our house. And there's a lot of people like that who are staying home and isolating themselves from others. You need something that serves the public and provides information for the public good, and that is public radio. And this would be a very bad time to start, you know, to say, well, we'll just get more donations from the public if they like it so much. Bad time to do that when people are being laid off their jobs right and left. You know, I know people who have lost income already, myself included, from responses to the coronavirus. So anyway, my understanding is you're looking at a budget with $1 million for public radio. I'd say that's the minimum that you should be funding it for. You really need to put this as a priority to serve the needs of the public in Alaska.
Thank you, Pangilly, for thank you, Douglas, for your testimony. I appreciate that. Next up, we have Deborah Potter.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I'm sorry. My name is Deborah Potter. I live in Skagway, Alaska, where I just bought a home. So that's not stressful at all. But I will say, boy, are my dogs happy lately. Anyways, I'm calling just to kind of echo what it seems like most callers have been saying. I urge you to fully fund public radio. This pandemic has showcased the essential safety role local community radio stations play in our Alaskan way of life. For example, last Wednesday, there was an emergency special assembly meeting in Skagway to address COVID-19 impacts and concerns. The assembly chamber was actually standing room only, and our local community radio station, KHNS, did live stream it, which meant everyone near and far was able to listen to the crucial safety information that was shared by the mayor and other public community leaders. This resource was obviously especially important to our community elders and others in the high-risk group not able to leave their homes. The critical role public radio plays in our Alaskan communities is no longer in doubt. There really is no more efficient way to disseminate up-to-the-minute important safety information, especially in a time of mandatory social isolating. I'd also like to do a quick plug to please restore funding for the Alaska Marine Highway so our coastal community members can have access to medical services. Thank you for your time and continued support, and I hope you all stay safe and healthy.
Thank you, Deborah, for your testimony. Next up, we have Scott Mazaris, City Manager Seward, followed by Rachel Lord. So, Scott?
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my opportunity to provide testimony. This is Scott Mazaris, the city manager down in Seward. I would like to reiterate Tommy Glanton's testimony about the House Bill 154 and the application for the additional funding to enhance the bed capacity for the opioid and drug rehab that we have here. That's very unique and an opportunity to provide service. I do want to also reiterate that we are on an emergency status here. We have issued rules, and we are trying to comply with all of the governor and the president's enforcement efforts. We are taking it very seriously. Our staff is primarily working from home. Additionally, I would like to thank you for your work and for providing testimony and time for opportunity to be engaged with you. The city is concerned, as the rest of us. I would support closing the airport operations for all non-cargo related transportation. I have family coming home. I have two kids leaving college, and like all college students, they're coming all across the country. And as you know, most of our issues are related to travel-oriented infection. So thank you for your time. And the Alaska Sea Life Center is also shut down and will severely impact their revenue budgets. And I just hope that we can pull through this together as a community and support our neighbors and family and take care of each other. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Scott, for your testimony. Next up, we have Rachel Lord, followed by Herman Morgan.
Hello, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rachel Lord. I live at Homer. I am a business owner. I'm a mother with children at home now. I'm also on the city council, although I am speaking for myself today. I want to thank you all for the work that you're doing in allowing public testimony. And as you work towards a funded budget, this is a time that requires courageous leadership and not just because we're facing a fiscal crisis and oil prices that are remarkably low, but also because of the pandemic, and the city of Homer has also declared a declaration of local emergency. In terms of the budget, I want to express my laundry list of items that I think are critically important. Top among them at this time include community assistance and bond debt reimbursement. A lot of response is going to have to come from the local level, and we need the state support. We need to be working as partners to ensure continuity of services and to ensure that our communities as we face dramatic, what I can only imagine will be dramatic revenue challenges coming up that we have state support. Community jails and the court system also need to be adequately funded. Public broadcasting, as many folks have been noting, is critically important. Our K-12 education system, we have teachers in the schools right now making plans for distance learning. Our schools need to be supported across the state. We need to make sure that we have students from all families in Alaska able to access educational resources no matter what crisis comes to our state. The university and community colleges, our healthcare system needs to be supported. Road maintenance, port and harbor infrastructure, and the marine highway system. These are all the things that I would put as top priorities. And again, I thank you for your work.
Thank you, Rachel, for your testimony. Next up, we have Herman Morgan, followed by Charity Pomeroy. Herman, you're up.
Yeah, good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Herman Morgan. I'm calling from Aurora, Alaska. I'm a district owner of the poorest regions in the state. I'm asking you guys to support the governor's bid to restore that $1,200 amount dividend that was taken away. Because even the president and them right now, they're saying they could give everybody $1,000 check maybe. And you guys are trying to pass a $7.5 billion budget or something. And here you guys blew through $14 billion in how many years? You guys got to cut your budget and give the money back to the people. You took $1.8 million from my community. In 3 years, it's almost $5 million. Multiply that time to all over the state. So put money back into the economy. That's what we need. It's expensive living out here. People need that payment fund more than all these non-profits who say, give us the permanent fund, we take care of them. It's not fair. And you can't afford Medicaid for all. It'll bankrupt the state. You can't afford it. You guys got to stop listening to all them lobbies and stuff. And you know we have the lowest test scores in the nation, and yet we have the highest per capita. And here you ain't not even putting our teachers when they're most needed, and they want more money. You gotta ask for get your money's worth, and start get rid of Common Core, get back to Saxon Mass, and get rid of Common Core. And a lot of students used to put away their permanent fund for college. Now they can't. Now what's going on at UA? How come they only raise tuition and Alaska students? That's our future. But, you know, it's expensive living out here. A guy in America is about $17.
Mr. Morgan, can you summarize your comments, please? Your 2 minutes are up.
I'm saying cut your budget and give us back the permanent fund. You guys are going the wrong way. We need that permanent fund. And stop spending all this money for, you know, wasting it like that, listening to unions and stuff. It's not fair to us. It's like...
Next up, thank you, Mr. Morgan, for your testimony. Next up is Charity Pomeroy, followed by Della Cheney. Charity?
Hi, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Good morning. This is Charity Pomeroy calling from Skagway, and I'm calling to urge you to allot the maximum funding possible for public radio. We have always known here in our community, because it is such a vital part of our little community here in Skagway, that it is a lifeline, but especially now that we are in a state of local emergency and everybody is confining themselves to their homes. Many in our community don't have, because it is cost prohibitive, internet in their homes. We have cell phones, of course, but cell phone service here in our community tends to be quite spotty. But the one thing that we rely on, especially in important times, is the information that we receive from our local public radio. So I urge you to fund the maximum possible funding for public radio. Thank you.
Thank you, Charity, for your testimony. Next up is Della Cheney, followed by Bridget Weiss. Della, you're up.
Good morning. My name is Della Cheney, and I'm not in support of the road from Petersburg to Cake or Cake to Petersburg because it will need a ferry for part of the journey also. So you'll need the road as well as a ferry to cart people's cars and other things across a portion of the road. And since they just built a new ferry terminal in Cake, it'd be nice to continue to bring the ferry to Cake and allow people to travel as in the past, 50-some years. And we love our ferry system and the way we get to visit our family back and forth from Juneau, Cake, Petersburg, Sitka, all up and down the coast. So I just would really urge our senators and our representatives to please use the funds for that road for our ferry system. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Della, for your testimony. Next up, we have Bridget Weiss, followed by Jeff Mucci. Bridget, you're up.
Good morning. Thank you. This is Bridget Weiss. I am the superintendent in Juneau School District, and I wanted to take just a quick minute to share a few things in general around educational funding. I do know that there's been an absence of our voice up on the Hill in the past week, and I am worried that that will send a message that we are not interested, and we obviously are incredibly, I'm not sure if I'm coming through or not.
We can hear you loud and clear, Bridget.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. We are, as you can well imagine, all hands on deck in our districts, and that is not only superintendents, but also our families are in crisis. So I know there hasn't been much testimony in the last week around our needs for funding, and the need is real. One piece I would like to touch on specifically is the debt reimbursement, our major maintenance piece. Sometimes we can rely on our local government to support us in different ways, and they've had to step in with the moratorium. Going forward, their options are going to be very limited. Our local economies, as you know, are deeply impacted by COVID-19, and our economies in Juneau in particular related to our tourism industry are going to be a really hard hit. So our city can't step in, and our buildings are in desperate need after that long moratorium. In general, obviously, we have increasing needs always in terms of utility costs, our salaries, our 90% people of our budget that we support. So when we look at flat funding, we're really looking at declining funding when we obviously look at the economic impact combined with our increasing costs. So the other piece that I think is unique now is that with our school closures, and we are still so up in the air and how long those will be, is that we will have increased workload. When we do come back together, if this closure remains longer, which all indications...
Bridget, can you summarize your comments, please?
Yes. All indications are that our school closures will be longer than the currently scheduled closure, and we will have higher needs in August and September to ramp our kids up. So I appreciate all you're doing to support our educational funding.
Thank you, Bridget. We now are going to go to Jeff Mucci, and I understand Rebecca Knight is back online, so we'll go with Jeff followed by Rebecca. So Jeff, you're up.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
All right. Hey, my name is Jeff Mucci. I'm calling from Petersburg. I've lived here since the early 80s, and I happen to be on the borough assembly as well. You know, I had a call earlier this morning that wanted to make sure that the borough was participating in the call-in session about the budget. But for us in a small town of 3,000 people, the real crisis that we have going on now is making sure that our folks in town are prepared for the epidemic or pandemic that's coming. And, you know, this, while this testimony is very important, we're just trying to sort all our stuff out. You know, the raw fish tax is very important to Petersburg. We've been struggling with the raw fish tax and the tariffs in the fall having to do with cucumber and geoduck fishermen. That's been a big hit to them. We're very thankful that KFSK is on the radio every day at 12:30 giving us an update from the hospital staff. The borough staff is doing the best they can to make sure that we are all ready for when it comes. General Manager Tom Abbott is doing a wonderful job. You know, I think what we need to make sure is that we're providing good leadership here, both at the state and local level. There's a couple of projects that are going on around Petersburg. There's a $40 million road that is actually, we can't figure out where it's going. I mean, if the state was looking for money to put towards this pandemic, then this would be a good place to get it. In small towns like Petersburg, it's not about the state budget at this point. It's making sure that the community is not panicking. It's making sure that the grocery stores in town are open. It's making sure that the grocery stores and restaurants in town are delivering groceries to people who want them. We're struggling right now. This pandemic is like the number one thing in our minds right now. And while you might not be getting all the testimony that you thought you might be getting during the state budget thing, a lot of us are just trying to make sure that we're doing the best we can for our families in town and making sure that we can
Mr. Mucci, can you summarize your comments, please?
Yep. Nope. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Mucci. We're going to go back to Rebecca Knight. Nope, she's off. Okay. I think she's traveling by boat right now and probably in and out of cell service. Okay. Next up is Mr. Philip Moser, followed by Rudy Bean. Mr. Moser?
Hi. My name is Philip Moser. I'm a constituent out of Juneau, Alaska. I've lived in Alaska for nearly 30 years now. I'm calling in to testify in support of the budget for the appropriations for the public radio system, in support of the appropriations for the ferry, and in opposition to the budget for the road out of Cake. I'm going to be spending most of my time talking about the latter two. The communities around here, I have a lot of friends that have lived in the outlying communities, Cake and Ingu and in Petersburg, and other places around Southeast. And I've used the ferry system to travel around to all of us. And I know that the people in these communities also rely on these systems. Here in Juneau, we're really lucky to have the barge system that supplies a major part of our infrastructure. But for a lot of these smaller communities, the ferry system is the barge. It is what we rely on for the majority of the places here to get around. And trying to replace that, trying to appropriate funds, millions of dollars, to create boats that have limited benefits, are available for a limited amount of time, and don't provide access to the kind of infrastructure that the ferry already provides, just seems like a huge waste of funds, especially right now when we need to really be making sure that we have our basic infrastructure set and strong for the pandemic that we're going through. I know that for myself personally, I just recently was trying to help my partner move up from down south. We were going to use the ferry system to move from Bellingham up to Juneau.
Mr. Moser, can you summarize your comments, please?
Yes. No to the Cake Road, please. Extra funding to the ferry system, if at all possible, and please to public radio as well. I think it's really important. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Moser. Next up, we have Rudy Bean, followed by Penny Valdia. Rudy, you're up.
Good morning. My name is Rudy Bean. I work for the City of Cake. We are in full support of the Cake Access Road for the reasons I've economic growth and the opportunity for cheap electricity, cheaper electricity. We believe it's important for the survival of our community. I'm also in support of your the DOT Harbor Facilities 50-50 grant program. We understand there's an allocation of $5 million for the program this year. It's a popular program. We are hoping that that allocation could be increased to at least $10 million. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. We go now to Rudy Bean of CAKE, followed by Penny Valdella. Rudy?
Oh, did you guys hear me?
Yes.
He's already spoken.
Oh, okay. Then we go to Penny in Kenai.
Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, thank you. I think I must have muted it. I apologize. This is Penny Vadla from the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. I'm the board president, and I am calling today to discuss my feelings about the operating budget, the capital budget, House Bill 205 and Senate Bill 154. Thank you very much for taking the time to hear our concerns. I'd just like to let you know what we've done. We have handed out 129 non-tenure teacher offer contracts earlier than we ever had before. We've had the same BSA levels from 17 to 2020. We are now putting 6 full-time elementary counselors in our school and 3.5 additional special ed teachers because those are our needs. We've worked really hard to retain our teachers, and I'm afraid we won't have the ability to retain our teachers if we can't provide adequate services for them. I'm concerned that what would it look like if the school districts don't get the $30 million? We have, like other people have talked about, debt reimbursement, increasing needs of buildings, increasing needs of students. Many schools around the state have put in some very promising practices, including our school district. We would like to go forward with those so that we can ensure that each child gets a quality education going forward. If we cut funding to education, which is one of the most important responsibilities we have as a state, then we cut potentially the future of our children. They're our future. They're what we owe. This is what we owe to them. I've been a teacher all my life. I came up here in 77 for 1 year and taught in the bush. I've been working for the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District in one capacity or another since 1978, and I've been working at the university. I see the needs we have. We're going into our general fund. We have a deficit. We will have a deficit in our fiscal year 21 of $2.595 million. We're using some of our unassigned fund balance. I want and I hope that and I applaud you also for passing legislation that increases internet for all schools, because we aren't just the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. We are a district that has every type of school in our district.
Can you wrap up, Penny?
Going forward, we need to ensure that we provide a quality education for our kids. And I will step off because I know you have many other people who might want to testify unless you have questions for me.
Thank you, Penny. We will now go to Judy Toe, followed by Pat Brownson. Judy, please proceed with 2 minutes of testimony. Judy, can you hear me?
This is Jody. Can you hear me?
Yes. Please proceed with 2 minutes of testimony.
Okay. Thank you. I guess I'll start over. All right. Good morning. My name is Jody Tao. I'm the finance director of the Petersburg Borough. Thank you for taking the time for public testimony. I urge the state of Alaska to stop cost shifting to municipalities. I'm requesting that the state fully fund the municipal school debt reimbursement and community assistance payments. A continued 50% cut in the school bond debt reimbursement passes an additional $240,000 expense to Petersburg's taxpayers each year. This is a $1 million pass-through to our taxpayers over a four-year time span if this continues. Petersburg school bonds were issued to help pay for our school major maintenance, a swimming pool replacement, and a vocational education building expansion. The residents of Petersburg voted over 10 years ago on issuing debt for these projects with the assumption that the state would be reimbursing over 60% of the annual bond interest and principal each year. Alaska municipalities issued bonds relying in good faith on the state of Alaska to live up to its financial commitments to education. Higher property taxes that these cuts create negatively impact any future bond propositions for construction projects in our community. We are already facing a health crisis, which is negatively impacting our economy. Decreased economic growth means departure of residents, families, and businesses, which will have a detrimental effect on our tax base and our island community. Thank you for your time, and I appreciate being able to testify.
Thank you, Judy, for that testimony. We'll now go to Kodiak, Pat Bronson, followed by Mark Larson.
Thank you, and I appreciate the time today and understand what the legislature is going through. We, as municipalities, I'm the mayor of the city of Kodiak, are certainly doing the same thing. So I would just encourage you in my brief time here to testify that you take the time to support local governments, which include all Alaska residents. We're all in this together. And that also with the operating budget, we have the largest community jail in the state, that you would increase that funding by $3 million if possible, that you would include funding for the marine highway system. As you know, we're an island in the middle of the Gulf of Alaska. We do not have roads. That is our main level of transportation. And the capital budget is certainly important at this time with infrastructure. How you do all that, I'm not quite sure. We're going to be struggling as well in being mayors and residents of Alaska, but I want you to know that we're here to work with you and support you and hope that there is not a lot of cost shifting and we as Alaskans can solve these problems. Thanks for the time today.
Thanks, Pat.
Thank you, Pat. Next up, we have Mark Larson in Skagway, followed by Ron Bernier. So, Mr. Larson?
Yeah, this is Mark Larson calling from Skagway. I want to encourage the legislature to fully fund public and restore funding to public radio. Now, this is a really good example of why especially our small communities in Alaska need that extra funding for public radio. Here in Skagway, we have a newspaper that's published every 2 weeks. And so obviously what they're putting in the newspaper is not what you would call breaking news. We really rely heavily on our local radio, KHNS, to provide, you know, up-to-the-minute news. And a bulk of the news that you hear on Alaska Public Media about the Skagway, Haines, and Klukwan, and, across the board in media throughout, is generated by KHNS. So it's not just the radio that you're supporting, but the news that's coming out about this, our area here. So it's really critical that this resource continues on, is perpetuated, and it's super important for our small communities. I'm sure you could say the same for every one of these communities, not just in Southeast Alaska, but throughout the state. They rely really heavily on whatever resources they have, and this is not the time to be taking away those resources. In fact, this is a really, this with the pandemic going on, this is a really good example of when we, you know, why we need these and why we need to keep these resources active, resources of information and knowledge. And real knowledge, you know, instead of just innuendo and a lot of the misinformation that's getting out there through social media and stuff, we need, you know, real solid sources of information. And that's coming from public radio right now. And it's oh so important that we continue to support that.
Thank you, Mr. Larson, for your testimony. And I'm going to invite Senator Hoffman to say a few words on public radio here just for a moment.
Yes, thank you. As the chairman of the subcommittee regarding public radio, we fully understand the concern that people have with the governor's submitted budget for FY 2021. That was a zero amount, but included in the bill with the support of the chairman, the level of funding at this time in the draft budget for the Senate is included at FY 2019's level, which is $2,036,000. So,
and is there more for TV?
And there is an additional amount for in the public broadcasting TV allocation. There is $633,000, which is again at that level. So
combined total nearly $3 million for public broadcasting.
Well, about 2.7 million.
2.7. Okay. So that is a proposed a budget that's putting together by the Senate right now. Did you want to comment on that, Senator Stedman?
Yes, just for those watching at home, as chairing the operating budget, we're assembling all our subcommittees information. Actually, we assembled it yesterday, late yesterday. We're taking public testimony today looking for adjustments. And when we're done here today, we'll talk about the meeting today recommend some tweaks here and there and try to get that document assembled and hopefully printed tomorrow. We'll wait and see how it goes.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. So for folks listening, please know that the Senate has increased the amount for public broadcasting than what the House had put in. And that's the draft budget that you'll be seeing in the next day or so. So we're moving on to Mr. Ron Bernier from Wasilla, followed by Carrie Harris. Ron, you're up. Do we have connection? Carrie Harris, can you hear us?
Okay. Can you hear
me? Yeah, who is this?
This is Carrie Harris.
Carrie, why don't you start your testimony, please?
Sorry about the rooster in the background. I want the whole budget thrown out, all of it, the supplemental, the whole thing, and restarted. I'm appalled that you guys haven't even bothered to try and find new sources of revenue. The PFD is not a revenue source. The PFD belongs to the people. And you've stolen it. In fact, from my family, you've stolen over $15,000. Gary Stevens is my senator, and he voted to steal $15,000 from my family. I really wish you all the best luck on your campaign, because you ain't got a chance in hell at getting back in. Throw that entire budget out. I'm a no on both of those. You go down to the basics. We need roads, police. Of course, I understand why you're against police, because you're thieves. But we need roads, police, fire, medical, and K through 12. That's it. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Ms. Harris, for your testimony. Okay. Mr. Ron Bernay, can you hear us? Okay, I don't think we have him online. Okay, Mr. Scott Arndt, Kodiak Island Borough. Scott, can you hear us? Okay, we're going to take a brief at ease. Okay.
On there. I'm with the Kodiak Island Borough in Kodiak, and
I also want to say that I support everything that Gary Stevens has been doing. What I'm here to speak about today is kind of the cost shifting to municipalities and the boroughs, especially with the school bond debt reimbursement cut. And the governor's veto last year of 50%, and he put the 50% only in the budget. We really, I plead with you to please restore the full funding for the school debt reimbursement. For Kodiak, that means $2.6 million more. And equating that, it's a $2 million increase that it's going to take to do that. And in light of what our citizens are going to feel with this extensive recession that started on Monday in Alaska and the United States, we can't afford that. Please do everything you can to restore that. The other thing that I wanted to speak about, two things. One is community assistance, restoring that to the current levels, 2020 levels, and adequate funding for the Alaska Marine Highway System. I understand that the House version of the bill includes additional money for the Alaska Marine Highway System, and I would say that that's a good starting point. And with that, I know you have a lot of things to do. I appreciate your time, so thank you.
Thank you, Scott, for your testimony. Next up is Lloyd Davis, followed by Sharon Hunter. Mr. Davis? Bless you. Mr. Davis? Are you there, Mr. Davis?
Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Can you hear us?
Yes, thank you, and good morning. My name is Lloyd Davis. I'm the mayor of City of Cape. And we all know the ferry is in a crisis right now, and I support the road going through for the Cape access here. You know, that it just improves our infrastructure on roads here in the community and throughout Southeast Alaska. Years ago, they had a transportation plan, you know, drafted up, you know, to connect all the inner islands and everything there, and I'd hope that they'd go back to that and relook at that as well, too. See nothing but economic growth and jobs. I don't want to be economically harmed anymore in our community here. The opportunity and potential is there, you know, for travel, for other options of travel, potential hydropower, and potentially getting on the grid as well, too. We pay very high you know, electrical costs down here in our community. There's great potential for moving freight and goods in and out of our community cheaper. Public safety. If we need to, DPSO needs some assistance.
Okay, hold on here, Mr. Davis. We have someone else online that I can hear, a female voice. If that female voice, please, could just mute themselves for and allowing Mr. Davis have his full testimony. So, Mr. Davis, please continue.
Thank you. Yeah, so we have the opportunity and potential, and you know, we for getting out of town for you know, medical as well too. Maybe not to Petersburg, but you know, traveling through, they try to get through to Juneau or Mount Edgecombe. Back in the day, back in the 80s, you know, when the ferry was really running, Petersburg was our hub. We did all our shopping and everything over there and whatnot there, you know, and then all the big stores got thrown up there in Juneau, you know, Walmart, Costco, Fred Meyer, whatever there, and it was cheap to travel back then, you know, flying or jumping on the ferry when the ferries were running. But now, there ain't no fairies coming by, you know, Cake or into Cake. They're going by us when they were running. You know, now it's so expensive for us to get up to Juneau and shop, you know. And if I could drive over to Petersburg and pick up some grub from over there, I would do that definitely. It would save me a lot of money. Tourism. We're not doing any more logging or, you know, and we don't have a fishing fleet like we used to. But we're turning to tourism over here as well, too. There's potential for an increase in that as well, too. And subsistence. You know, I live off the land and the water myself. And, you know, if I could get further out the road to other opportunities out there, I'll be doing that, you know, myself. And I know half those people that signed that invalid petition, they were going to be out there using that road themselves as well, too.
Mr. Davis, can you summarize your comments, please?
Yes, I support the access road, the Cake access road. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next up, we have Sharon Hunter from Petersburg.
Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you loud and clear.
Good. My name is Sharon Hunter, representing myself, and I want to urge you to include and prioritize adequate funding for our Alaska Marine Highway and public radio. As the current unprecedented crisis unfolds, our isolated setting perfectly illustrates our dependence upon these crucial services. Our air and barge support could be affected at any time, and a functioning ferry service is essential to getting through this event. While our local radio station, KFSK, has stepped up to serve as our lifeline, as we follow isolation guidelines, keeping us informed of crucial updates and providing connection to news and local events, along with keeping us entertained. And I'd like to also address my personal feeling about the funding source that, while the PFD is nice to have, I'm not going to spend out of my PFD to repair our roads or maintain infrastructure. And so my take on that the only equitable, not that I'm a fan, but the only equitable fundraising measure that we have would be an income tax, because those who don't make much wouldn't have to pay much, and those of us who can pay more, we would. And so in conclusion, I want to thank you for your hard work and dedication and staying in Juneau during this time to complete the budget process. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon, for your testimony. Next up, we have Caitlin Jarig, followed by Joy Baker.
Hi, yep, this is Caitlin Jarig in Skagway. I'm representing myself, and I just wanted to call to support the local funding for the local public radio and the Alaska Marine Highway. And I wanted to thank everybody for their hard work this year. That's all I got.
Okay, Caitlin, thank you very much. Next up, we have Paul Roy Kelly, Juneau Board of Education.
Members of the Senate Finance Committee, thank you for hearing us. My name is Paul Kelly. You can't see me today, but as a bald man, I wear many hats. I'm calling in today wearing my Juneau Board of Education hat, my state employee hat, my University of Alaska grad student hat, and my third-generation Alaskan hat. I'm well covered this morning, but my testimony is my own, and I'm testifying on my own time. First of all, thank you. Thank you for fighting for education funding. Because of your lawsuit, the $30 million operating grant promised to our schools statewide is being delivered. For the Juneau School District, that amounts to $1 million. My first ask of you this evening is, don't stop there. Our teachers, staff, administrators, and administration work harder and harder every year as new responsibilities are piled on. And as the dollar inflates, they're working with less and less. Please pass and fund HB 236 to increase the base student allocation for both this year and next. Next, I'm currently studying for a master's in public administration at UAS. I feel privileged to be able to continue my education while living right here in Juneau. The cuts agreed to by the university's leadership are unsustainable, and I'm worried that down the road, other public employees and other public servants won't be able to continue their education in the state that they love. Furthermore, these cuts to the university are incompatible with teacher retention. Teachers educated here are more likely to stay here. Let's keep a strong university for our students and our future. In the time I have left, I'd like to make a few more asks. Fund our ferries. Our students rely on them for both academic activities and intergalactic competition. Allow the moratorium on school bond debt reimbursement to expire. As chair of my school board's facilities committee, I can attest that we have many schools that are under-maintained. I know that our district is not alone. And lastly, please find us a sustainable source of revenue so that we can get back to investing in Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly, for your testimony. Next up, we have Joy Baker from Nome. Joy Baker?
Good morning. Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. This is Joy Baker. I represent the city of Nome. I would like to speak on behalf of the project that we have submitted in as a priority request from the city for the completion of the design of the Arctic Deep Draft Port to 40 feet. The city appreciates the grants given by, excuse me, I'm having problems with my throat, supported by the state to and the legislature for the initial feasibility study and design of the port. As the study ran longer than anticipated, the in-kind work that the city performed to assist the Corps in acquiring all the environmental and technical information has exceeded the first grant. We have moved into the second grant, which was tagged for design. So we're just looking for the $650,000 amount to complete the project all the way through design. The feasibility report is near completion. Army Corps has been finalizing it. They will be submitting it to Congress here in a matter of months, and we are hopeful for signature by the Chief of Engineers and inclusion in the Water Resources and Development Act in the 116th Congress. We're looking to ensure that once the report is signed, we can move seamlessly into the design phase with the Corps, as we are considerably, as everyone knows, behind the curve in having a deep water port in the Arctic to support our national security fleet as well as other commercial vessels. So if we were building it this summer, we're already behind the curve. We have a two-year design term phase, and then 3 to 5 years for construction. So to have this delayed for funds is something we're trying to avoid. So I thank you for your time. I thank you for all of your hard work that you do down there, and considering the circumstances, your ability and desire to continue to work. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Olson has a comment.
Ms. Baker, you talked about the money for the deep water port there and the Arctic port that's so necessary, especially during these times of global unrest. My understanding was the amount that we were trying to go ahead and get was more $3.2 million. And how far does that get us, I guess, is my question.
The 3.2, how far has that gotten us?
No, how far will it get us if we were to get an additional $3.2 million?
Oh, sir, that would complete design and get us into probably the bidding phase of for the construction and take care of a lot of the initial costs for construction, and then we would have to locate the additional design money. That would complete this phase and the next phase and get us through the bidding phase.
No further questions, Madam Chair. Thank you very much, Ms. Baker.
Thank you, Senator Olson. So I'd like to thank everybody who signed up to testify today. We are past our cutoff time of 10:15. For those of you who did not get a chance to testify over the phone, we do have an email. And if you can send your written testimony to finance.committee@akledge.gov. We are going to adjourn for this morning, but we're going to come back at this table at 1 o'clock today to hear Senate Bill 240, which is unemployment insurance. So, committee members, we are done as of now, but we'll see you back here at 1 o'clock. Thank you. Good afternoon. I call the Senate Finance Committee meeting back to order. Today is Thursday, March 19th, and the time is about 10 after 1 p.m. We are meeting in the Senate Finance Room. Right now with us, we have myself, Senator Von Imhoff, we have Senator Bishop, Senator Olson, and Senator Giesels with us. I think other senators will be joining us shortly. They're just grabbing lunch. First on today's agenda is Senate Bill 240, an act relating to unemployment benefits during a period of state or national emergency resulting from a novel coronavirus disease, COVID-19 outbreak, and providing for an effective date. This is our first hearing on the bill. I'd like to invite Senator Click Bishop and his staff, Cody Gusendorf, to the table to present the bill. And thank you, Senator Wilikowski, for joining us. So Senator Bishop will just stay where he's at and present the bill.
Anytime. Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee members and those at public watching at home, we are in extraordinary times, and extraordinary times requires leadership. And I'm happy to say that the Senate as a whole is leading on this issue and this particular issue, and that's Senate Bill 240. It's a Labor and Commerce Committee bill. It relates to unemployment benefits during a period of state or national emergency resulting from the COVID-19 outbreak, and it provides for an effective date. The bill, we have been working this concept for over 2 weeks. Senate leadership has been in contact with the Alaska Department of Labor, the U.S. Department of Labor, our congressional delegation, and what you see here before you today is a result of that work. The sectional, there's actually five sections in the bill, Madam Chair, and there's two main sections. The other three sections are conforming language, regulatory authority by the commissioner, and an effective date immediately in a sunset provision in the bill. I would like to say that to my committee members and those people listening at home, there are over, I know there as of Tuesday of this week, there were 12 states that have already passed similar language to expedite week waiting requirements. Our state is one state that has a week waiting requirement to receive benefits, and this legislation does that. And also sets had a 90-day threshold in it. This bill does for these emergency benefits, and that's the genesis of the bill. Our goal is to get replacement income into the economy as fast as we can, because at 5 p.m. last night there were more people in the food service retail industry. We need to keep this cash flow going. That's what the UI Trust Fund was established for. And with that, Madam Chair, my staff is ready to proceed at your request.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Whenever you're ready, Cody, say your name for the record and go through the sectional, please. And thank you, Senator Wilson, for joining us.
For the record, Cody Gruzendorf, staff to Senator Bishop and the Labor and Commerce Committee. I'll walk through a sectional of the bill. Section 1 adds a section to uncodified law that says an insured worker may not be disqualified for conduct related to COVID-19, including providing care, including medical care, to one or more persons, preventing or limiting the spread of COVID-19, or preventing or limiting economic loss or harm. Subsection B of Section 1 is the 90-day threshold that the senator talked about. Subsection C is waiving the 1 week waiting period. Subsection D states that this benefit does not violate the Unemployment Security Act. Subsection E directs the Commissioner of Labor and Workforce Development to administer this section. Subsection F cites the definition of insured worker. Section 2 of the bill increases the dependent allowance for the duration of a state or national emergency related to COVID-19 to $75 per week per dependent. It also eliminates the limit for that. Current limit is 3 dependents. This would eliminate that. Section 3 of the bill repeals this act April 1st, 2021. Section 4 provides transition language, authorizing the Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development to implement this act, and Section 5 is an immediate effective date.
Do we have any questions for the bill sponsor or regarding the sectional? We do have two invited testimony online. So stay where you are, Cody, as well, just in case. We have first Patsy Westcott, Division of Employment and Training Services. Can you hear us, Patsy? Are you with us?
Yes. Chair Von Imhoff, for the record, my name is Patsy Westcott. I am the Director of the Division of Employment and Training Services with the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development. The Unemployment Insurance Program is one of the components within the Division of Employment and Training Services, and so I am here and available to answer any questions that the committee may have regarding unemployment insurance and this bill as it relates to paying unemployment insurance.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Thank you, Patsy, for being online here today. You and I have been talking frequently in the last couple of weeks. Could you put on the record, I think you might need to staff up with some more employees to meet the demand. Could you just let the committee know how that, if I'm accurate on that, and how that process might work?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Bishop, we have been looking at our potential staffing needs as in anticipation of the increased workload that we know or that's already started to come our way. We have already diverted staff from other units in the unemployment insurance program to assist our frontline staff in taking claims, and so they are currently doing so. We've diverted approximately 20 staff so far. We're also doing overtime. We've expanded our phone hours so that we can respond to unemployment workers' needs more quickly. But even with those measures, we do anticipate the need to fill some of our vacant positions. We have a number of vacant positions already in the unemployment insurance component that, because we were at kind of at historic lows for unemployment insurance workload, we haven't needed to fill those, but we do anticipate that in the coming weeks we will need to get those positions filled. So I have about 25 PCNs that are already budgeted for. They've just been vacant. So we'll be looking to recruit for those.
So you have, okay. So Ms. Westcott, I actually am hoping that you can sort of describe the process before we continue with the questions. And the process that I'm thinking of is, can you start with how the applications are processed? Are they online or via the phone? And then kind of describe the qualification process. Do folks, if they haven't necessarily lost their job, but are just merely asked to stay home, do you have a box for them to check of something like that? And then lastly, and I'll repeat these as we go, but how are benefits paid out? Are they electronic or check? So just, again, how the process works from soup to nuts.
Sure, thank you. Those are great questions, Chair Von Imhoff, and I'm happy to answer those. So your first question was the method in which people file, and the answer is we have both. We have an online application, and that's probably through the My Alaska portal, and that's probably the fastest way for someone to file for a new claim. But then we also have call centers. We have three call centers around the state. We're a virtual call center, and so as calls come in, they just go to the next available worker to take a claim for those individuals that don't have access to the internet and need to actually talk to someone.
Okay.
So once the claim is, let's see, what was your second question?
So then just describe the qualification process. Is it like a one-pager, or does it take, you know, 3 or 4 days? And do you normally have like a verification process, and is there some type of quick verification, like a streamlined one for this period of time?
So
Chair Vinehoff, so applications are processed real time. So as soon as we hit the accept button, the individual has an established claim in our system. Then we look at eligibility. Is the person actually eligible to receive the benefit? And there's a couple different parts of eligibility. One, they have to be unemployed through no fault of their own. And then the second part of the eligibility is that they have to be able, available, and actively seeking work. There are some waivers that temporarily waive that able, available, and actively seeking work part of the requirement. Right now, we are trying to interpret them as liberally as possible so that we can pay these workers that have been impacted by business closures and just COVID-19 in general. The bill before the committee today helps to relax those provisions even more so that we can really respond to the needs of unemployed workers during this unprecedented situation. So once we've established their eligibility, benefits are or have been in the past paid out every 2 weeks. So a person files their new claim and then they have to wait 2 weeks, and at the end of 2 weeks they file what we call a claim certification form for those last 2 weeks, and then we send the benefit payment out. Benefit payments can be through debit cards, through direct deposit, or through check if someone doesn't have a bank account or doesn't want the debit card. We do it still issue checks. We today are taking the move to make some programming changes to our system to allow for single week filing so that we can expedite payments out to claimants even quicker. Instead of a biweekly filing process, we're going to go to a single week filing process.
This is great news.
Yep. Did I cover all your questions?
You did, and I appreciate that. And I just have so thank you for that comprehensive description and the changes that you're making and the adjustments. And Senator Rulikowski, just 1 second. The last question that I have is, are you prepared to accept federal money when we expect it, hopefully soon? Are you prepared to accept it and be able to process the claims using federal money?
Chair Vinehoff, absolutely. The unemployment insurance program is a federally funded program. Both, our administrative funding comes from a grant through USCOL, and we are prepared to accept and utilize any money that the administration sees fit to send us.
Thank you very much. Senator Rulikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What is the solvency of the UI fund right now?
Through the chair, Senator Rulikowski, I believe that our UI economist, Lennon Weller, is on the line, and I would defer questions about our UI trust fund to Lennon.
Mr. Weller, did you hear Senator Rulikowski's question? It was about the solvency of the fund.
good afternoon. I did, Chair Vinehoff. For the record, again, my name is Lennon Weller, and I am an economist for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development and serve as the UI actuary. Regarding solvency, fortunately, we're actually in a pretty good position right now. We have just south of $500 million, roughly at $493 million, which is actually currently above our current statutory targets for full solvency.
So, Senator Rulikowski.
Thank you. And just on that $493 million, how long would you project that would allow us to run? Or what sort of, we've heard in the press recently they're talking about possible 20% unemployment rates. What sort of flexibility does that $493 million afford us in terms of, if we pass this bill, is that going to put the trust fund in any sort of risk?
Through the chair, Senator Rulikowski, it's a very good question, and clearly we're dealing, you know, working through a very uncertain time. There's a lot of moving targets. I can tell you that I've done certainly some stress testing, you know, out at least for a 12-month period, and we could roughly absorb about an eight-fold increase over what we're current benefit payments on a monthly basis. Certainly, duration and magnitude are going to have a significant impact on our ability to absorb payments going forward. But so it's impossible to say, you know, whether or not we could weather any sort of storm. I mean, certainly nothing is indestructible, but we are certainly well equipped to handle a very significant increase in benefit costs, at least certainly for the foreseeable future, 3 to 6 months. We could certainly handle some costs, you know, I would say in the realm of 10 times roughly what we're used to experiencing and what we have been experiencing over the past couple of years.
Thank you, Mr. Willer. I think thank you for stress testing the fund, to Senator Wilikowski's point. I think if we're looking at the three phases of the federal aid that's coming out, there's literally phases 1, 2, and 3, and they're for different purposes. One of the purposes is for unemployment insurance. There's also other purposes going to SBA, small business, and those are loans for businesses to also cover payroll. So it's kind of coming in the belt and suspenders. So the goal is for the fund not to be stress test to the 8 to 10 times. First of all, you discussed duration. If the federal funds can come within the next 4 to 6 weeks, the duration is shortened. The federal funds are used versus the state funds. Number two, if during the one or two phases the SBA money comes in, and I spoke with the SBA people, they are getting geared up to be able to provide these loans as well to businesses to be able to pay all sorts of expenses, including payroll. So that's, again, like I discussed, the belt and suspenders, and that should hopefully be coming in between 3 and 4 weeks as well. So, Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess this is for Mr. Waller. Do you have any sort of comparison on how Alaska's benefits compare to what's the maximum allowable in Alaska right now, and how does that compare to other states in the country?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. So currently we have a maximum weekly benefit amount of $370. And that in dollar amounts tends to put us somewhere in the middle of the pack nationwide. However, as a replacement rate, we are, in fact, in last place when it comes to replacement of lost wages.
If I could, do you have that chart? I'd be interested in seeing both of those charts, I guess.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, we do certainly have those charts, and I'd be happy to provide those to the committee.
Thank you.
Senator Wilikowski.
Just slightly different topic, but I don't know if Mr. Waller is the person or not, but can you just explain how UI is funded? Is it funded out of the general fund at all, or does it come from employers or employees or federal funds or what, typically?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, the unemployment insurance program is funded solely through a payroll tax derived from employers and employees, and the shared cost of the program, but it's collected on an ongoing basis from those covered and paying in what we consider taxable wages. That amounts to about 93% of all wage and salary employment in the state.
Senator Bishop.
And just, Lennon, isn't it also true that the department can receive administrative grants from the federal Department of Labor for federal government to the UI Trust Fund?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, yes, that's correct. We certainly can receive funds. I believe Director Westcott mentioned the fact that administration of the program is funded through some federal grants. There's also the ability to gain federal dollars to pay out emergency unemployment compensation and, in some cases, extended benefits, which I believe is in the works at the moment.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The sponsor says that people that are quarantined are eligible for these benefits. How would you administer that, and what type of documentation would you have? And would people that self-quarantine themselves that are covered under the UI program be included?
Is that for Mr. Weller or
Mr.
perhaps
Pat
Westcott?
Westcott.
So through the chair, Senator Hoffman, when an individual files for unemployment insurance, they are required to certify that the information that they are giving us is true and correct, and they are advised that there are penalties for fraudulent activity. So as is the case with anybody that contacts us to file for unemployment insurance and attests that, you know, they were laid off from their job or, you know, they were unjustly fired or, you know, we take statements and we, if we have reason to believe that the information that they have given us is not accurate or questionable, we investigate those. But otherwise, you know, we process their claim, and individuals impacted by COVID-19 would be no different. I forgot the second part of your question. I apologize.
My question is, someone submits a claim and said they were quarantined either by their employer or where in the legislation does it state that? And the second question, are people that self-quarantine themselves are eligible for these benefits?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, that's what this legislation attempts to do, is broaden the eligibility so that these benefits are available to anyone that has been impacted by COVID-19. So those individuals where their employer says, you have to go home, you need to quarantine yourself for 14 days, we want to be able to pay those individuals unemployment insurance benefits while they're home on that quarantine, or the parent who isn't able to work right now because the schools are closed. And currently, under current unemployment insurance law, we can't help those parents out during this time. And so that's exactly what this legislation seeks to do, is for anyone that's impacted by COVID-19 and is not able to work at this time, It's through no fault of their own. And so we want to be able to pay those individuals benefits and to help them get through this period.
So your answer to my question that people that self-quarantine themselves are eligible if they feel that they may infect others if they go around them?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Hoffman, exactly. You know, part of the goal here with this legislation is to protect communities. And so if an individual feels that it's in the best interest to protect the community that they self-quarantine so as not to take that risk of community spread, we want to be able to help those individuals as well.
Thank you.
So one of the questions I have for you, Ms. Westcott, is if a person is being is quarantined at home for whatever reason, or just been asked to be furloughed for a period of time by his or her employer, but is being paid by his or her employer through whatever means the employer found means, either through an SBA loan or through their own means. Does that person qualify then for UI benefits if they're already being paid just to stay home?
Caravan on Hop, no, they would not qualify for unemployment insurance benefits if they are on paid leave.
Okay. You have a question, Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a comment and a question. And Ms. Westcott, I was really appreciative in your comments earlier. Some of the committee members were away on other state business, but you used the words, the federal government has given us the guidelines to interpret these as liberally as possible to execute our mission here at the Department of Labor. I appreciate that. But the second thing is, I want to go back to, I know you got 25 PCNs open, but I just, you know me, I've always been one to plan ahead. Here in Alaska, we always got a contingency plan for the contingency plan. But with that being said, I'm wondering if we don't might need some additional PCN authority if you were to see an increase that you couldn't handle. That's all.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, is that a question or a statement?
That's a question. Do you agree with the question? I mean the statement.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, I certainly would not say no to additional PCNs in the event that they are needed as we respond to this outbreak.
So, Senator Bishop. So to that point, Ms. Westcott, so how many of the people that you're going to transfer now are already cross-trained and can hit the decks running? And if you're and if they have no zero training, how long does it take you to take an employee from beginning to end? Because you know we were running those classes in the department years ago, and I can't tell you how long it took to educate them to get them up to the speed for the call center.
So through the chair, Senator Bishop. The staff that we have diverted from their normal duties to take claims at this time, one of the great things about the unemployment insurance program is that really to get to any other unit in the program to advance up, you really have to have that frontline claims taking experience. And so we're in a great position because the staff that we're able to divert to help us with this increase in claims load, have at one point been a claim taker and kind of just need a few minutes refresher to remember how the process works. So for that piece, we're good. Yes, typically our, because the program is there's a lot to it, and so typically our training period is 3 months. In cases like this, and certainly this was the case back when we had the recession in 2008 and 2009, and we did a lot of hiring at that time as well, we would be looking, I think, to really bring people on and really focus them on single function, and that is initial claim intake and not training them on any of the other pieces that a claims taker is normally responsible for. But just focusing them on here's how you take a claim application and get it in our system. So, and that I think we can accomplish in a very short period of time, like a week.
Thank you.
Just want to make you hold on. Is there anybody else? Okay, Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. Two questions. The first is, what's the maximum time that a person is going to be eligible for unemployment benefits if this passes?
So through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, when an individual establishes a what we call a benefit year, within that year, the maximum weeks of eligibility are 26 weeks. We, Mr. Weller briefly mentioned extended benefits. Because of the increase in workload that we anticipate, there is the possibility that the state of Alaska will trigger on to what we call an extended benefit period. And extended benefits allow an individual additional weeks worth of eligibility during their benefit year, and the maximum number of weeks eligible under the extended benefit program is 13. So if the state does trigger on to extended benefits, then the total weeks available would be 39.
Senator Wilkowski.
And then what, if a person, because the way, what I'm reading in the literature, it seems it's kind of a rolling closure, I guess. We'll have a period of time where everything's closed, and then they're going to open it up again, and then people are going to start getting the virus again, and this is going to go on for a year, 14 months, 18 months maybe, possibly. If someone's receiving benefits and then they go back to work and then they're laid off again, I'm talking restaurant workers, bar workers, coffee shop workers, do they have to reestablish, do they have to work a certain period of time to become eligible, or are they, would they, if they got laid off in, say, a month, would they be entitled to go right back on workers, on unemployment insurance?
So through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, that 26 weeks is would be available at any time during their benefit year. So they could file a claim, you know, if they're impacted right now because their restaurant closed down, they could file a claim right now, claim, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks of benefits, go back to work. For whatever reason, there's an outbreak, the business shuts down again, they're out of work again, they call us, reopen that same claim, and start claiming benefits again. So that 26 weeks is available throughout that benefit year, depending on the individual need.
Thank you. What I would comment is that this bill, of course, does have an expiration date of next April, so we have about a year's grace period. And at the same time, you know, we're uncharted territory. We're going to have to be working this out as we go. And I think what Ms. Westcott said early on was that they have the latitude by the federal government to liberally define and interpret the rules. So I think that because we don't know when the wave is going to hit, we don't know to what degree Alaskans are going to be affected and how long it's going to last, again, that term duration, that we've given it a full year. And if it lasts beyond that, hopefully we will all be here next January and we can tweak this if we need to, because we will have a lot more knowledge at that point. And we'll kind of know a little bit where we are financially a little bit better at that point, with markets dropping, et cetera. You've heard this. So we're going to get through the next couple months, and I think we're giving the tools for Ms. Westcott and others to implement this. And I'm reading right now the federal government just passed a $1 trillion proposals introduced. So, Senator Bishop, did you have your hand up?
No, I mean, the main takeaway in this bill right now is we're waiving the week waiting period and get them. Senator Wilikowski, we all know at this table how that's this restaurant closures has affected a group of people that we all need cash flow. Hell, I need cash flow. You know what I mean? And we're getting them cash flowed right now. That's the main takeaway for me.
Do we have any further questions for our two invited testimony? Okay. Thank you both, Ms. Westcott and Mr. Weller. We are going to go through the process of public testimony. Okay, so I'm going to open up public testimony at this time. Do we have anybody online? We certainly don't have anybody in the gallery. I'm going to close public testimony. Do we have any further questions for our bill sponsor or for Mr. Grusendorf? Okay, we're going to set Senate Bill 240 aside at this time. We plan to take up the companion legislation when it is in our possession, hopefully tomorrow morning. Let me know this afternoon, please, if you have any concerns. Okay? So our next bill is HB 197, House Bill. It is an act extending the Alaska Seismic Hazards Safety Commission and providing for an effective date. I'd like to invite Representative Chris Tuck and Chris Curtis, like to come together, legislative auditor, to the table to present the bill and the audit findings. Okay, whenever you're ready.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, committee members, for hearing House Bill 197. For the record, I am Chris Tuck, Representative Chris Tuck from South Central Anchorage, District 23, also known as the Diamond Business District. What House Bill 197 seeks to do is to extend the Alaska Seismic Hazard Safety Commission. As we know, Alaska is one of the most seismically active regions on Earth with a history of large and damaging earthquakes. Last year alone, we had about 50,289 earthquakes, and so far this year, we've had 8,788 earthquakes. In looking at the 2019 summary of Alaska seismic activity from the Alaska Earthquake Center, it should be in your packet. The thousands of earthquakes that strike Alaska every year threaten the safety of the people of Alaska and the viability of our infrastructure, which includes roads, bridges, runways, buildings, our homes. And the state of Alaska has worked really hard in preparation for that. Part of that was first introducing the Alaska Seismic Hazard Safety Commission back in 2001. And some of the duties that the commission has is to make recommendations to state, local, and national officials on how to reduce Alaska's vulnerability to earthquakes. And it also works on ways to plan for and improve our earthquake recovery and reconstruction efforts. The fiscal note on this is a small fiscal note. It's $10,000 per year. It's primarily for travel. This commission is made up mostly of volunteers that actually come from the Division of Geological and Geographical Surveys, Geological Surveys. So basically, that's what House Bill 197 does. I do have Chris Curtis, our legislative auditor. She's here to go through the results of the audit, as well as we have Sterling Strait, should be on the telephone call. He's the chair of the commission, and then also Steve Masterman, who is also available to answer any question. He's the director of the Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Tuck. Ms. Curtis, whenever you're ready, please state your name for the record, and let's go through the document.
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis. I'm your state legislative auditor. We did conduct a sunset review of the Alaska Seismic Hazard Safety Commission. I believe you have it in your packets. It is dated March of 2019. So the audit found that there continues to be a public policy need for this commission's existence, and we are recommending extending the commission 8 years, and that is the maximum allowable in statute. If you turn to page 9 of the report, you'll see a schedule of annual expenditures for this commission, and you can see that this is a relatively low cost of leveraging volunteer expertise. Annual expenditures range from just $3,500 to just over $13,000 a year. We did identify a need for two administrative improvements. They begin on page 16. First, we recommend the commission chair ensure procedures are implemented to publish meeting notices timely and accurately. We did find 5 of 25 meetings we tested were not public noticed or not public noticed timely. And then second, on page 17, we recommend the commission chair ensure the strategic plan is updated to reflect current goals and priorities based on the experience. Jumping to page 29, which is the response to the audits, we've got DNR commissioner agrees that there does continue to be a need for this commission. And then she goes on to explain corrective action they plan to take to address the recommendations. And then on page 31, the chair of the commission agrees with the findings and recommendations and then describes that procedures have been implemented to ensure the public meetings are noticed and that the strategic plan has already been updated.
Any questions by committee members? No one likes earthquakes, but the last one is still pretty fresh in our mind. So thank you both for doing this. It's a simple bill. It's just extending the effective date. All right, easy peasy. Let me just go read and see what I've got here. It says, we're gonna open a public testimony, okay? Let's just go ahead and do that. Before I do that, just real quickly, senators, we do have, I think what they mentioned earlier, Mr. Sterling Strait, Alaska Seismic Hazard Safety Commission, as well as Steve Masterman, Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys. Do you have any questions at all? Okay, so we're going to go ahead and open a public testimony. So public testimony for HB 197 is open. Is there anybody online? There's nobody in the gallery. All right, public testimony is closed. All right, with no further questions, thank you, gentlemen, for being online. We do appreciate it. We will set HB 197 aside at this time, but plan to take it up soon. please let me know if you have any questions or concerns as soon as possible. So this does conclude today's meeting. Our next meeting will be tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. We will let members and the public know as soon as we have a final agenda. We are adjourned.